Hello. Hi, who's this?
This is JD.
Hi, I'm sorry, what is your name?
JD.
JD, hi, how are you?
Pretty good, how about you?
I'm good. I wonder where everybody is.
Hi, I'm Marcia.
Hi, Marcia. Hi, how are you?
I'm okay, good. Yeah.
Merry Christmas. I hear you guys listen to Christmas music when you're on hold, huh?
Yeah, all the time. It's so strange that they don't change it.
So weird. I heard that years ago, and apparently it's been like this, I guess, for years, now that you're saying it again. Is it always like this?
Yeah, always. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like rushing the seasons.
Yeah, really.
Hey, Michelle, it's Kelly.
Is anybody... Oh, hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hey, you're
doing well. Thank you. How about you?
Good. This seems like a quiet call tonight. I think there's only four of us for some reason. It was so packed on the last call. Is anybody else on? Just double checking.
Hi, it's Michael. I'm here.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. All right. Well, maybe people start trickling on now. I posted a reminder about 15 minutes ago. Maybe people are just seeing it. Anybody else pop on before we get
started? Hey, guys.
Hi. Who's this?
That's John.
Hi, John. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. You?
Good. Good. All right. Well, this would be a nice call because it really is. It's still a small group. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. Hopefully a few more will join in. But obviously, I'm sure if whoever listened to the call or was on, hold on. Sorry, who's this?
This is Spencer.
Spencer, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad.
Good. So, I was just saying, I talked a lot on the very first call, and I try not to do that, but I totally try and do that because it's a lot of information I want to make sure people have so that you're using DARE for the right reasons in the right way and hoping that kind of clicks with everybody. And it was like a very long roundabout way of me trying to show you the reasons how anxiety lives in the fight, in the resistance of discomfort and not in discomfort. I tend to get a little repetitive, tend to get very repetitive, but that's kind of the reason, because it's so backwards to what our natural response is to try and get rid of things we don't like or prevent bad things from happening. And it makes sense, right? But our anxiety lives in the getting rid of. So the more we're trying to get rid of things, and I had a group call last night for DARE Advance, and I mean, it's always the same theme of, it's always the same type of conversation. You know, we may bring up like different ways to present it, but it's really always the same thing. Learning how to stop fighting ideas of danger, feelings of danger, ideas of future danger, memories of past danger. Rather, because our alarm rings the same way whether we're fighting the idea of danger as when we're fighting real danger. So I just really want to make that point one more time before I open up the call. DARE is designed to stop fighting discomfort, not to eliminate discomfort. Does that make sense? Has anybody been able to see that as they've gone through this week? No matter what your challenge was, whether it was the fight of the idea of what if I have a health problem, or the fight of the idea of what if I have a panic attack, or the fight of the feeling of an uncomfortable physical sensation that I may actually be having right now. It's all the same kind of similar threads that run through it. So does everybody understand that? I just want to make sure. Does anybody need anything clarified when it comes to that? Because this is our last group call for the challenge week.
Could you just say it one more time?
Probably not. okay, what did I say? So it's not about, and you know, I'll say it so many different ways. It's not getting rid of the discomfort. Anxiety is not, whatever it is, whatever you're fighting, whatever you would originally have signed up for, anxiety is not actually that. It's just we've been fighting that, whether it's the idea of what if I have a health problem, or what if this feeling is a heart attack, or driving anxiety, or what if I have a panic attack, or, oh, this actual feeling that I'm feeling right now is so uncomfortable, whether it's heart palpitation, lightheadedness, derealization. Who cares? It doesn't really matter when it comes to using DARE, because DARE is not designed to make those things directly feel better. It's designed to kind of like zoom out a little bit. It's not actual danger that needs to be fought. It's just discomfort. We fight it as if it's danger. So our alarm rings as long as we're fighting. So it's learning how to just sit, accept, allow, even run towards, right? Even make that idea bigger. Even make that sensation, try and make it stronger. Not to get more comfortable and not to eliminate fear. Can't turn off fear. We can't stop how we feel. We kind of try and do that too. But to learn how to not fight what we're feeling, whether it's like emotionally or physically or what we're thinking, thoughts are already there. You're already feeling how you're feeling, and you're already having whatever sensations you're already having. And it's kind of learning how to teach yourself, and that's the end of it. Yes, my heart is racing. Period. That's the facts, and that's what's happening right now. Everything else that we add after that is what I think I referred to it on the last call, collateral damage, right? We make it so important as if it's danger right now. So we take all these sensations that we don't like, and these ideas of danger or the fight of the idea of discomfort or embarrassment or sickness or whatever it may be, we are making it so important. And our alarm is doing exactly what we're telling it to really, really well. Oh, Michelle, you're trying to get rid of that thing, whatever it is that thing is that you signed up for from the beginning of this call. Great. We're going to do a really good job and show you every time that thing pops up and give you energy to fight it. Because if that's important, right, if you're fighting it, it must be important. So every time, like, oh, the tiniest little bit of it might pop up, like a hint of it pops up, we're gonna alert you, and here's some energy just so you can get rid of it, because we want you to stay alive for as long as possible. As long as you keep fighting, it keeps ringing. But it keeps ringing because you keep fighting. There is learning how to stop fighting. Marcia, was that answer anywhere in any of those words that I just
said? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't go off like a script or anything. This is just my brain from the last 10 years of doing this. So you can always rewind it, I guess, on the recording and go back and listen. But I don't know if I exactly said what I said before.
So I feel a little like a failure because my discomfort is so overwhelming that I wasn't able to eat and I wasn't able to sleep. And it was like so impacting me. And I wasn't able to, you know, to dare it. So I feel like, why can't, you know, why can other people do it? And I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else experience anything similar?
Yeah, I've just had a crazy week with family stuff, and I've listened to the first day and I've been using that, but I haven't been able to listen to my other audios. But so I'm disappointed in that, but actually, for how hard of a week it's been a good week, just even based off the first audio I was able to listen to. So a little different, but also similar.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, you know, also just to mention, and Marcia, I'll definitely answer your question too. So all those audio, everything is still accessible to everybody after this group ends. So if you didn't get to do it this week, well, you have many more weeks left of your life, right? So if you want to kind of run through it on your own, you can play the same, you know, the same recordings on the same days for yourself and even listen to the recordings of these two calls. And, you know, what's nice is that it's not like, oh, I didn't do it just right last week. I messed this all up. So like, all right, well, wow, that was tough. Okay, now what? What am I doing different? What should I, what can I change? What can I work on? How do I work on it? Rather than like, I said, forget it, it was a failure. So it's like, okay, wow, that was tough. What, let's take a look at it and see what was tough so that the next time, because this, I'm sure there'll be more comfort around the corner for everybody, right? More discomfort because that's just life. You know, so it's like kind of learning how to use these new tools. But of course, these tools are used in such a backwards way. It takes a lot of time, right? It's like, again, oh, guess what, everybody? As of today, the alphabet is being spoken backwards. Good luck with that. Take care. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. That's simple. That's not easy. So I have to practice, you know? So, Marcia, what is your discomfort that was so difficult for you?
I have depersonalization really badly, and my anxiety is just so great that I shake and I feel like I'm going to lose my mind, and I feel like I'm going to jump out of my body. But at the same time, I'm so exhausted because I'm not sleeping and I can't eat. So, you know, I just feel trapped, and then it turned into a deep depression because it went on for about 2 months. The anxiety went on for about 2 months.
Mm-hmm. How much are you sleeping, and when do you find yourself able to eat, like better or worse times during the day?
Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but I know I told you individually that I started meds, which I, you know, resisted for decades, actually. So if I take a med, it calms me enough that I'm able to eat. And sometimes I can get 7 hours of sleep now, but sometimes I can only get 5 because then I wake up with horrible indigestion at 3 a.m. That comes with my anxiety.
Right. I'm glad I asked, actually, because I feel like somebody's going to come back and listen to this call and say, oh, shit, I wish I got 5 hours of sleep a night.
Well,
it's funny.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm very conflicted because I really want to, you know, I have organic couch and organic mattresses, and I don't use chemicals in my home, and now I'm putting chemicals in my body, and it scares the shit out of me. But I was not able to self-soothe or, you know, dare myself into – I mean, now I can dare some things, but I feel like a failure because I chose to use meds.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up because that comes up a lot. And I don't care. Whatever. Anybody can talk about anything on these calls, on my calls. At least.
Thank you.
I don't care. There's no secret. I mean, really, you take medication, who cares? That's my response to it. I don't really care. Anybody wants on the call who takes medication, it doesn't mean you – oh, I wasn't able to hack it myself, or I'm a failure, or everyone else can get it, not me. And now I'm taking, again, like you said, we make it this extreme, right? It's not like, oh, yeah, I got strep throat, so I have to take antibiotics. No, it's, I'm a failure, and now I have to put chemicals into my body, which is like poison, right? Like, we make it so important and extreme. I would just bring it back to the basics. Oh. I can choose to take medication or I can choose not to. I chose to take it. Why? Well, it kind of helps me kind of, maybe a clearer head to use these steps a little bit better. So I'm going to, right now, just today, for now, in the present moment, today I'm taking medication, right? Again, we bring it off into the future too. Oh, what if I get stuck on these meds and I can never come off? And then what if it doesn't work? And then I have to titrate down and then I have to take another med. And I've heard such horror stories. I don't know, I'm sure that goes through your brain and maybe
other
people's brains as well. Yeah.
It's even been on the forum, you know, that I've seen people's lives destroyed by medication, you know, like that's been put on the forums. And I'm like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah. I also stick to Dare Advanced more so if you're on some of the other forums, you know, I would stick to Dare Advanced if I were you. But take it for what it's worth. But yeah, right now I'm taking medication. I could choose to not take it. I could choose to keep taking it, right? Keep it in that mindset of what's failure? I'm doing this to make progress and to start getting better. So how is that a failure? And here I am working my butt off all day long working this program. It's hard because it's this paradox of learning how to work really hard at not working, you know, working really hard at not doing anything, but here you are. So that whole failure thing is out the door. So whatever anybody does or doesn't do, how you talk to yourself is just as important as whatever it is you're doing.
Mm.
Dare or don't dare, diffuse, allow, and towards, but if you tell yourself you're a failure, then, I mean, you could win the marathon. And, like, you could win the marathon and say, oh, but I should have run it, like, 2 minutes quicker, you know? So, and that goes for everybody on the call. If you are not throwing yourself a party all day long for the accomplishments you make and giving yourself as much credit as you would give to anybody else, you'll never reap the benefits of anything with DARE or kind of like anything else, because it'll always be, but I should have done it better. Or, yeah, I did it, but I did it with Ned, so that doesn't really count. You know? It all counts. It all counts.
Mm-hmm.
I saw somebody post something. It's so relevant to this, and I wish I saved it because I would read it word for word. It said something like they were reading a quote that said, you should be nicer to yourself. And the response to that, yeah, you stupid bitch, you should be nicer to yourself. Why can't you be nicer to yourself? And it's like, yeah, exactly that. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, be kind to yourself, you stupid idiot. Like, that's nice. Be nice. So it didn't work so well last week. Oh, well, right? Now what? Now this week. Wow, I slept for 5 hours. Look at me. I'm still alive. So apparently I'm eating enough and I'm sleeping enough because I'm still here and I'm still able to talk and walk and function. I might not like how I feel, but acknowledging that takes the danger out of it as well, right? Because if it's, I am starving myself, I am sleep deprived because I am fighting this demon all day long, that sounds so much worse, you know? Even though it's the same situation as, yeah, I don't like how I feel. Sometimes people actually are sick, like they have like a stomach virus. Oh, I could barely eat all week. Yeah, you're right. You have a stomach virus. So what? You could barely eat all week. Okay. But this way make it so much more meaningful. You know? Oh, not doing it right. I could barely eat. I still can't sleep. Even though I'm averaging 5 to 7 hours of sleep a night. And yeah, I've been able to get some food, but not as much as I would like. And we stop putting expectations on ourselves of how much we should eat or should weigh, or even if it's the opposite, I should be gaining weight, I should be losing weight, I should be sleeping more, I should be sleeping less. This is what happened. This is what happened last night. This is what's happening right now. Right now, I'm feeling depersonalization. Okay, for 2 minutes, I'm going to sit my butt down and I'm going to kind of watch it. And this, I know, Marcia, I'm talking specifically like about your particular thing, but everybody on the call, just replace it with the word that the thing that you're fighting the most. Right now, I'm just going to sit with this feeling. Wow, I don't like it. And yes, I am afraid. I'm going to have to make sure I'm eating and getting good night's sleep in this moment. Right now, I'm just practicing letting go. I have to practice this release mechanism. You know, I practice it multiple times a day. I still might feel fear, but for 5 minutes or 5 seconds, whatever you pick, I'm practicing that ghost spaghetti, like that, like drop all the tension, drop all the resistance, and just feel it. You don't have to like it, but you're practicing not fighting it. And just doing that throughout the day, multiple times throughout the day, even if you're only feeling it at a 2, rather than waiting for an 8, right? Say, all right, well, let's feel it. Some of us try to avoid it. You know, it's kind of at a 2. All right, let's get busy. Let's distract myself. Let's clean the house so I don't have to think about it. Put on music. Let me call like a family member and just chat. Oh shit, it's at a 4 now. Okay, it's at an 8. All right, let's dare. So everybody who's on the call, just be aware of if that's how you're going about it. It's still being looked as a monster that needs to be taken care of, and if DARE is being used in a reactive way to combat discomfort, This tool is not a weapon. It's a tool to say, well, there you are. Even when I feel you at a 1, if I feel you at a 1 or if I feel you at a 10, I still just don't like how I feel. Granted, it's a very high, but it's not an actual emergency. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say you're not a failure. I am very similar boat as you. I was raised in a home that if you have a headache, you drink a glass of water. You know, that's just been my life as a very homeopathic way. And you compare that to my wife, whose dad's a doctor, where medicine is the answer to everything. But the biggest connection for me was when I started meds 4 months ago was, your body, it's a brain chemistry thing, and some people, like, it's the same thing if you think of, like, thyroid. Some people's thyroids require medication in order to balance it. Sometimes in order to, you know, get things started again, you need to get your brain back into a more level chemistry. And I realized that when I was playing Mario, and I had a panic attack playing Mario, and I was like, Pat, is my body is out of whack, that can shoot me up to a 10 playing Mario, because that is not something worth panicking over. And like she was saying, like, it's just kind of got me back to where it's a better baseline for me, and now I've been doing these dare pushes on things I never would have thought that I'd be able to do again, which, you know, I don't think you can do it with just medication. I think the, you know, the pushes and stuff are still really important, but some of us, depending on where we're at, you need help getting things back to an equilibrium.
Thank you. Who is this?
This is JD.
Hi, JD. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, like, again, like medication, yeah, you know, we could talk for hours, which we won't, about medication, but like in the nutshell of it, it basically dulls your sensations and it dulls your response to your sensations. You know, so it's like you don't feel the need to fight so much anymore, because first it feels like there's less to fight and you feel less resistance, so, which is great. So fine. Go ahead. And, you know, if that's what you're prescribed, that's what you're prescribed. Just keep in mind, like, exactly what you said, JB. That's not the end all to it. There's not a problem in your brain where you take this pill for X amount of days and it's gone. So this is what happened is, like, everybody's kind of hit this medical model of, like, a pill for this and a pill for that. What medication does when it comes to this, it kind of gives you maybe a little more level playing field to work with, to still use the same exact techniques you would have used without the medication. You know what I mean? It's just on level 1. You get to bring yourself back to level 1. Okay. Some people, like, can't even get through the book. So whatever, you take medication, you take medication. I'm not telling anybody to, but when it's viewed as such a taboo and a secret and a failure, like, that's kind of the feeling we put on ourselves, and that's not fair either. You take it or not take it. So, you know, but as you're taking it, be aware of, like, yes, I'm taking it so I can practice more, right? Because remember, it's not about comfort. It's about getting stronger to not fight discomfort, and that's confidence. So, and that's why I have people come on there and like, oh, I've been like back and forth on this medication, and I did better, and then I came off the medication, and then I did worse, and then I did. Well, sure, because if you're not learning the tools on how to respond to the discomfort, as you taper off your medication, you know, you kind of just feel everything back to how it felt before. But if you haven't learned that idea of letting yourself feel it, right? That's always the part that mm-hmm. tends to be missing, right? So it's like, this is kind of like being able to practice. And as you practice, and the medication starts to become irrelevant as well. People, like, mm-hmm. This is what I've seen, at least in my experience, that people will come on and say, yeah, so under a doctor's care, right, if you start to taper off, do it under a doctor's care. Oftentimes they can write prescriptions for smaller amounts as time goes on rather than you cutting a tablet. It's more like exciting. Say, all right, I came down on my medication and I am expecting to feel more discomfort. But now I've got some practice under my belt on how to sit with discomfort. Oop, there's somebody here on the background. Anybody? Just going to put that on mute. So just look at it, view it in that aspect. Also, for anybody who takes medication on like an as-needed basis, it's called a PRN, you know, like that handy-dandy Xanax that people wait and wait and it's so bad, I just have to take something. For anybody, again, I'm saying this not just to you, Marcia, but like people will listen back to this call. People can't always make this time. If you're given that prescription, whatever, same thing, fine, whatever. But a good way to use DARE and to practice is take the pill or not take the pill. Again, I don't really care. But if you choose to take this pill because I am feeling highly uncomfortable and I would like to feel better, right? That's the word. It's not, I have to because I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I'm going to lose control. I had to. I couldn't hang on anymore. I'm such a failure. Not that. It's, wow, I'm feeling very uncomfortable. This particular medication is designed to help me feel more comfortable. I'm choosing to take this. Okay, I will choose to take this, but I'm going to take this in 3 minutes. And for the next 3 minutes, I'm going to sit here and dare. I'm going to sit here and ask for more. I'm going to practice. Sure, I'll take it in 3 minutes, but on my terms, because it's not dangerous. I don't need this to keep me alive. I'm just taking it to feel better. And even when you just change your words just a little bit, it changes how your perception of this whole approach and this whole thing. Does that all make sense to everybody?
Yes, totally.
Good. So who else is on? Who else wants to pop on and say hi or share how the week's gone, or if you have any questions or any aha moments or anything like that, any difficulties? No, everybody's all better? No problems? Fix this right up?
Michelle, this is
Kate
from California.
Who is it?
This is Jane from California.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. I've been doing this my whole life, and so at this point I feel like it's an involuntary response. It's totally a habit, especially with anticipation. So if I'm going on a walk, I'm going to be hit by a car. If I'm in a car, I'm going to be in a crash. If I'm flying on a plane, the plane's going to crash. I mean, the thought automatically comes into my head. And so I'm kind of losing confidence that just by allowing it, it's going to get better. Because it feels like, because it's a habit, I should be doing something to break it. Like, when I feel the thought come into my head, like, snap a rubber band on my wrist or something to sort of get my mind away from that thought. But I know that doesn't jive with the DARE response.
Right. Well, you have lifelong experience apparently with this, right? So I'm sure you've spent the majority of it trying to get rid of it. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. As soon as I was able to realize with anxiety and put a name to it, I started to try to, make it better.
Right. And see, that's a great example. It was a simple example, but that's a great example. You have a very overprotective alarm system. So there are thoughts. There's your alarm. Right? There's situations and there's your alarm. There's feelings, like physical sensations, and then we have our alarm system. So there's like, picture it like this. The thoughts are not the problem. We don't have to get rid of thoughts. We don't have to shut our alarm up. You have this alarm. And again, like Barry said, like make it silly, make it a cartoon character. I have all different examples. Sometimes it's like, your little old granny or a little kid or a little somebody had come on. It's like their little yippy chihuahua. Alerting you to a possible scenario because its only job is to keep you alive. That's your alarm's only job. Keep you alive for as long as possible. So it is on the lookout for any chance of danger. So exactly what you described is exactly what your alarm is supposed to do. Hey, Jane, don't get hit by that car. Oh, don't walk under that building. That rock might fall off that building and kill you. Oh, what if you walk on this side of the street and you get hit by that car? Oh, don't drink that. It might be poisonous. right? Like, those thoughts are coming from this protective part of you that's kind of just making sure you're okay. And it's kind of like what one giant what if, because it all leads to, right, like, what if you die or what if you get hurt? I'm guessing, right? Like, what if something happens to you?
Yeah.
So it's this dare is designed to, your alarm is already ringing, but if you're fighting those thoughts, if you're trying to not have those thoughts, you're fighting thoughts of danger the same way you would be fighting danger. Right? I need to do something. I need to snap myself out of this. Just like I need to get myself out of the way when a car comes, I need to not think of that thought. Oh, that's a terrible thought. Don't think that thought. And that's where most people get stuck, trying to do something to get rid of that thought because you don't like that thought. Right? We don't like it. You're not telling me all the wonderful thoughts that pop into your head. Right? You're not telling me, oh, wow, what if that dress fits me and it looks perfect on me? Or, oh, what if I get that raise at work? Like, I am sure those thoughts pop up in your mind too. They don't create anxiety. Not because they're comfortable, but because we're not fighting them. We just don't fight comfortable things, right? We fight the things we don't like. So rather than trying to get your alarm to shut the hell up, it's your protector. So you want, it's, again, this is the part that seems backwards. You turn to it and you say, oh yeah, you're right. You're actually right. I could get hit by a car. Of course. Sure, I could. I could. I mean, I'm on the street and there is a car. I could get hit by a car. Absolutely 100% correct. You are right, alarm. Thanks for letting me know. Anything else you want to let me know about? And then you, when you let go, like that is accepting and allowing, like diffuse, like, oh well, I just had a thought I don't like. You're right. We tend to do the opposite in a very subtle way, and I think I addressed this on the last call, kind of, but it's a very hard point to get, and I said it last night too on Dare Advance. It's like we get so used to kind of like trying to go at it in this logical way to prove to our alarm that we're safe and sound and everything's okay, right? And anybody else get kind of caught up in that? Probably without even realizing it. Oh, look, I'm fine. I've been to the doctor a million times. They said everything's fine. See, here's my chart. Here's my paperwork. The doctor said everything's okay. And we just do that because, you know, we're basically trying to tell our alarm, shut up. See, I'm fine. I'm quiet. I've proved that everything's fine. Now leave me alone. But your alarm doesn't care about that. Your alarm just says, yeah, but what if? Yeah, but you didn't get hit by that car. But what if you get hit by that car? But what if you get hit by a car tomorrow? Sure, yes. So what you want to start doing is acknowledging your alarm by nodding at it. Not, I hear you, now shut up. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously, you're right. Things could happen. Even if people have been through real-life situations and their anxiety is stemming from that because they're fighting the idea of it happening again, right? Somebody posted on the group, but I did have a stroke. Like, yeah. Well, I'm sorry for that. People do have strokes. But what where we get so stuck is that now we're fighting the idea of what if I have another one. But our bodies react in the same way as if we're having one right now. Do you see? It's like, if as long as you keep fighting and thinking you need to do something about your thoughts, your thought, your alarm thinks, oh, we told her, watch out for that car, and she is kind of tensed up. So, oh, all right, we better keep telling her all these other thoughts because she's responding as if she's in danger. She did do something. It just knows you're fighting something. It doesn't know you're fighting it. Do you see?
Yeah. Okay, so the idea is it's the fighting that's making it come back again and again because you're telling it that, oh yeah, this is meaningful and real and so I need to keep doing this for you. Is that the idea? And if you don't fight it, then it's telling your alarm it's not such a big deal and maybe it won't come back as often or as strong.
Right. As a byproduct of you not fighting it, it kind of starts to fade off your radar. Stop having, you'll probably notice you stop having so many thoughts when you honestly, truly stop trying to get rid of them. And that's
okay.
Another backwards thing because we'll like, okay, I'm not trying to get rid of them. I'm going to check in 3 hours and see if they're gone. And oh shit, they're still there. So that's more like tolerating, but it's truly just taking this idea that those thoughts are truly like unimportant right now. Yes, I don't want anything bad to happen. Who wants to get hit by a car? Not many people, you know? So like, take that at face value. You're right, alarm. That would really suck. Should that actually happen, I will absolutely fight for my life then in the present. And I hope you will bring full blast and will send me so much energy to stay alive. But right now, it gets a shrug. Well, that's just the idea of danger. That's not a car that's actually plowing towards me right now. Like, you can't choose to turn off your thoughts, but you always have the choice of how you respond to them. Always. You can always choose your second conscious response, not your initial reaction, right? Somebody comes up behind you and says, boo! You can't decide you're not going to jump. You've already jumped, right? You've already been startled. But you can choose to turn around and not punch that person in the face, right? Oh, it's my husband. Oh, he scared me. I'm still going to fight as if my life's depending on it. And, like, you know, you punch him. It's like, oh, no, I am still scared. Oh, but I don't have to do anything. There's no real danger. I don't have to like how I feel. But all of this works in, like, a release mechanism. Like I said on the first call, it's like shaking out that rug. And all the dust is swirling around you. And whatever you called for, whatever you signed up for DARE, that's your dust. I hate this. This is my problem. Depersonalization, fear of health conditions, panic attacks, whatever it is, that's what we're fighting. And it's so ingrained in us to, like, swat our hands around and try and get rid of that dust. Oh, it's right in front of my face. Oh, I hate this. Oh, get rid of this. And we flare our arms around. The guy next to us shakes the same rug out and just sits there and does nothing. And the dust settles itself down. We are working really hard at trying to make our body calm down. But as long as we're doing something, our body's going to keep giving us energy to keep doing whatever it is we're doing. Do you see how that works in, like, such a backwards way?
Yeah.
So it's like you want to go out and almost look for thought. Be the hunter today. It becomes really weird and sometimes a little funny. Like, hey, alarm, you and I are on the same team. We're next to each other. I am me, and you're the part of me that's trying to keep me alive. You're my wingman. You're my bodyguard. You're the one that's going to say, hey, Jane, look at that. What about this? But I get to make the final decision. I get to say, yeah, you know what? Well, we might get hit by a car. You're right. But right now we're just crossing the street. Come on, alarm. Thanks for letting me know. Hey, thanks. Anything else you want to point out to me? And go out almost on the hunt for it. Even though that sounds strange, do you see the reason why? Because it's not getting rid of thought. It's showing your alarm that I don't have to fight thoughts of danger.
This is JD again. Along that same line of, you know, your first thought isn't always the best thought. You know, you don't have to go with your first thought. One thing that I've always, that's helped me kind of visualize this and, I guess like Barry said, like kind of like joke about it. And I apologize for anyone who has problems with flying. I do too. But so they've done research studies on plane accidents, and a lot of people, the first thing they do is they get up and they try to grab their bag in the overhead compartment, because anytime you're on a plane, they tell you, don't forget your bag in the overhead compartment. Don't forget to get your bag. And so it's so ingrained into you, this is what you need to do. And then you, and so that's what people's first reaction is. In a horrible situation, they go, I need to grab my bag, when really that's not what you need to be doing. And so, like, my my kind of thing. Like, I tell myself, like, no, I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to go with this first reaction. I don't need to grab my bag. I need to, yeah. I don't know if that's a good example, but I thought that was interesting that you don't, you know, your first reaction isn't always the best because there's things that are ingrained in us, kind of like the health things, like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling a tingling in my arm. It must be a stroke. Like, no, actually, I've been laying on my arm for the last 20 minutes. That's probably why it's starting to feel pins and needles.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when you really look at that example, we go from one, from just discomfort to now fighting the idea of danger, right? Oh, my arm has pins and needles. Ooh, pins and needles is a sign of a stroke. Oh, I hope I'm not having a stroke. Oh, I better make sure that doesn't happen. Bing, right? There goes the alarm because now we're fighting it as if it's a stroke when it just feels uncomfortable. And a lot of times we, like you said, we're wrong. And because for most of our lives, we're really smart and good at things and we're really good at getting things done. We're usually not wrong about a lot of things. Right? We're like the go-to people at work and we're good at stuff and that just comes with the territory. But we're generally always wrong about this stuff. Right? Like we are not having multiple strokes a day or getting hit multiple times by a car. If you're getting hit every day by a car, you're probably doing something else wrong. And we should probably just talk about that because that's probably more, more important, you know? It's like, oh, but what if? What if? What if? What if? So we take something we don't like, and you see what we do. It's rather than we go from, oh, it feels like pins and needles in my arm, which is truly what it is, right? That's the feeling I'm feeling right now. But then we mess up that word feel. We say, it feels like I'm having a stroke. And that's wrong. That's where our alarm rings because it's, oh, she's having a stroke, right? It's like, you don't feel like you're having a stroke. You're feeling what you're feeling. You are imagining how it would feel like to have a stroke based on that sensation, right? It's like we get very detailed. It feels like my heart is beating out of my chest. I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I'm about to go crazy. Okay, so like the last 30 times you actually went crazy, how did that feel, right? And then... You know, and then when you fought it, did you get rid of that? You know, like how many people had actually had real heart attacks and they're like, oh, I should have dared better and I wouldn't have had this. It's like it kind of hits that core part of us that's like we are vulnerable. You know, we can get hurt and we can get sick and people die and people have other things that happen and we don't want that to happen and it's scary. And we don't feel in control of it. We feel vulnerable. We don't like that feeling. So we try and fight all these things to kind of make ourselves feel better, which just keeps us fighting. So that's why this is not complicated. I think because it's so simple could make it difficult. it's just a matter of practice. So that's why on our last call, I like to try and make sure that people know, like, the job is to go out and practice getting stronger at sitting with discomfort, even if it's for 10 seconds. That's your goal, right? So go back. All right, I fought it all day long. I'm a failure. All right, well, whatever. So today I'm going to sit for 10 seconds. I'm not a failure. Okay, so I just fought it yesterday. Today, that's going to be on my list of things to do. Today is the day for 10 seconds, for 5 seconds, whatever. Pick the number that you're going to do and just do it. We get stuck in ambivalence. We get stuck in uncertainty because we're trying to do it just right. Just do it. Let's just try and see how it goes. I'm going to sit, and I'm just going to sit and feel what I'm feeling. Let's just say I want to go back to fighting it or distracting myself. Sure, whatever. But this is when I practice. And when I practice, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to congratulate myself for it. And you really want to try and work that practice, even if you're not in a high level of anxiety, you can practice this mindset all day long. You could practice it when you're stuck, like driving behind somebody who's going like 4 miles under the speed limit and keeps braking, and you have to be somewhere in 10 minutes and you're clenching the wheel, right? And you're going, just go! And you know that's not actually doing anything to change the situation. It's just creating more resistance in you, right? So it's learning how to take something you don't like and just not like it, right? Summertime, we have mosquito bites. All my kids have mosquito bites. It has nothing to do with anxiety, but like you feel like you want to itch that bug bite, look at it for a minute. Wow, this is uncomfortable. I really feel like I want to itch it. All right, I'll scratch it in a minute. But like right now, I'm just going to feel itchy. Again, these examples probably sound silly and like childish, but when we keep it simple, we allow our alarm to become just as simple as that. It's just my alarm. It can only communicate with me by sending me uncomfortable feelings, because that's the only way I can jump into action. I don't jump into action when I'm relaxed and comfortable. I can jump into action and save my life when I am uncomfortable. I am braced and ready to go. But I have to practice being braced and ready to go and like consciously just say, nope, I know that's how I feel, but I don't need to act as if, you know, I don't need to keep fighting. I don't like how I feel, but I can sit and just not like it. So please, as like the days go on, practice, not practice trying really hard to feel better. Practice allowing for bits and pieces of time during the day. Even if you're not feeling the sensations, go look for them. Even for a second. Oh, where's that derealization? Oh, there it is. All right. Yep. Well, there it is. You're right. There it is. So I can't unring a bell, but I could just sit and feel it for a few seconds and then go back about your day. And also want to mention before we get to, like, as we're coming towards the end of the call, so the Facebook page will close down in probably a few days after the weekend. What was happening was that we were having, like, a gazillion Facebook pages everywhere, and, like, people weren't really reaping the rewards of, like, the group as a whole, because there's a lot of great people that you're missing out on that maybe were in other groups or other boot camps or Dare Advance. So what we try and do is have, if anybody who's interested after this challenge week, you're welcome to stay in touch with each other and form your own private groups. That's fine. We don't discourage that at all. But what we do have is we have what's called Dare Advance for people who have kind of been through some version of this or a boot camp or other versions of our program before, where it's kind of like you come into like the larger community of Dare Advance and like you continue moving forward. It's not as intense, like it's not everyday challenge and daily phone call and daily messages to your phone and 2 phone calls a week. It's 3 phone calls a month, and 2 are with me, and 1 is with Barry. My 2 calls are on Thursdays. At 1 p.m. Eastern time, and it alternates to the other one, which was last night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Barry runs his, I believe it's 12 p.m. on Saturdays Eastern time. It's kind of like the best staggering of times that we could hit most of the world. So if you can't make every call, they're recorded as well. And then Suzanne also runs our Facebook page for Dare Advance, and the price for that is $25. It's super cheap and reasonable. You are welcome. I think you may be getting messages about like maybe taking a trial run of it, or you know, like with whatever specials. I don't know anything about that aspect of it, but I always say just for $25, it's a good thing to do for a month or two afterwards. It kind of keeps the momentum going. You can always not sign up and then come back and sign up. We'd love to have you back. If you disappear forever, you are always welcome to send me a message just to check in and say hi. I would suggest email. My email is michellecavanaughcoaching@gmail.com. I also offer one-to-one calls if anybody wants to pop on and do that. I'm not going to tell you anything different than I tell you on these calls. I'm not saving the good stuff for the one-to-one calls, I promise. It's just, you know, maybe reinforcing things in a more personal way. Suzanne runs offers those as well. So I just wanted to mention that before it gets to 1 o'clock and I forget to say everything that we have going forward. But Does anybody have any more questions or anything they'd like to share or would like any feedback about anything else as we finish up our call
like
for the DARE challenges?
I would like to ask a question if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So basically, the only thing that really confuses me is, so with these examples, you kind of have to run out and hunt down situations where you're kind of, you're trigger anxiety, correct?
True. Yep.
But,
keep going.
So on those exercises, see, for me, I understand the principle of sort of letting go and relaxing. It sounds a bit weird. Because I've been trying to sort of practice this technique for a while. So when you, it's almost like I'm pretty good at kind of scooching through life and there are situations where I can kind of ignore things and get on with things and do things. And I'm focusing on other things. So I don't have to deal with this uneasy feeling, right? But because of this task, I find interesting is I'm looking at, I'm sort of hunting the situations down. Sometimes it feels like I'm just in a, I'm in a loop of endlessly fucking with myself. Like I could just stand there and fuck with myself and feel terrible continuously forever. And when I deploy their thing, technique, it, you know, it's doing the 21-second thing. It goes at zero and it kind of goes away for a bit. But then I could just sort of fire it up again if I wanted to. Does that
right.
make sense? So it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me an example, though. So what are the things that you're fighting? What, like, what did you sign up for? What are you... What's you, where does your bell ring?
Okay, so my thing is any situation in which I'm trapped. The
it's
easiest
what?
Way to hunt that down is trapped.
Oh, trapped. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, but one of the things I have is, it sounds bizarre, but in very wide open spaces in the middle of nowhere, I can also feel trapped because I can't get out of that situation quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So,
yep.
essentially,
wow.
with the task, with that task, I just... So obviously the challenge was to deploy the 21-second challenge thing. So I just sort of rode an area where I live. I can kind of basically ride out to the middle of nowhere. So I sort of ride a while out. I deployed the technique and I went, do you know what? I should go further and push myself. So I just cycled further and did it again and cycled further until it eventually kind of beat me. I was exhausted. I was knackered. And
what beat you? What happened?
Eventually, I couldn't get to 1 second. It got harder and harder to do the count back down to one and just go, okay, cool, I feel okay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, it beat me. But that's what I mean. It seems like a loop of you. I could just endlessly fuck with myself constantly. So that's what feels counterintuitive, where I'm like, you can get to a stage where you kind of just empty your head and you're not going down that road. But it seems to be, the way you describe it is, let yourself go down that road all the time and then just feel those feelings at the end of that road. Does that make sense?
Right. And also pay attention to what you're saying. What are you telling yourself? Because you said, I signed up for being trapped. So remember, it's being trapped or feeling as if I'm trapped. I know I sound like a real pain in the ass when I pick my words like that, but you want to start paying attention to how you're talking because you feel trapped, but are you constantly being kidnapped by people and tied up in places? Like, are you actually trapped? Are you being like bound and gagged somewhere? Like, are people constantly stealing you from places and trapping you? Right? So, I'm just saying it in a lighthearted way so that you start telling your alarm that because your alarm's responding as if you are trapped. You know, it's, but I'm so far from civilization. Oh my gosh, what if I'm so far away? What if something happens and I need help? What if I get sick? What if I have a panic attack? What if? Right?
Yeah,
there's always something tied up in that.
Hmm.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah. No, I would say, I think with mine as well, it is the same thing, obviously, but it's that feeling that just, that sort of irrational frontal lobe shuts down feeling.
Because it's viewing it as danger, right? So now,
I 100% agree with you.
Sorry?
No, 100% agree. The hard thing is, I feel like I'm, with the challenges like this, I'm kind of habitually creating the reaction, making it worse is what I'm saying. So before, it was almost got to a stage where I could do that journey without thinking about it too much and just getting on with my life. And now with this habit, it kind of, or this technique, which is on and never, to never switch it off, to never find the peaceful route to always kind of go head on into the feeling of anxiety. It feels counterintuitive to kind of summon that headspace.
It's completely counterintuitive, but for a reason. It's not to constantly feel shit all day long the rest of your life so you don't feel scared anymore. So that's not really, like, you know, the goal. The goal is engaging in life, and when your alarm rings at the wrong time, it's to elicit that feeling of, like, that ghost spaghetti, that where you can just kind of, like, you ever see, like a balloon, like a big blow-up sort of thing, and they turn off the air and just kind of crumples down to the ground, like those bouncy castles? Like,
yeah.
That's there. When you feel as if you're trapped, when you feel the need to do something, what you want to do is tell you, you're basically telling your alarm, yeah, look, I'm in the woods right now. Yeah, I'm here. Or wherever it is you feel trapped. I'm not trapped. I mean, I'm just, good diffusing word, I'm just in the woods. I could leave if I have to leave. But we are so far away. Yeah, so nothing's happening right now. But what if? Like, try and, like, as you move forward in this, pay attention to what your alarm is saying and how you're responding to it. Right? Like, give it a different kind of voice. Give it my accent, maybe, because that's pretty obnoxious. you know, have your alarm, like, sound different than your voice, where it will always alert you to something. Like Jane was saying, what if you get hit by a car? It's the same sort of thing, even though it's, oh, I feel trapped. Okay, but I'm not trapped. I could choose to leave. Or I could choose not to. So, alarm, if you want to ring, I'm going to choose to leave, but like in 5 minutes. So go right ahead and keep telling me how I need to leave right now. And I know that the only way you can communicate with me is by this uncomfortable feeling, but I'm not actually trapped. Like, I'm not trapped. I can leave. If I were trapped, yeah, I'd be freaking fighting for my life to get out and save myself. But I am not trapped. I feel as if I'm trapped. So right now, I am feeling uncomfortable. If I fight it, I will continue to send this message to my alarm that feeling trapped is just as dangerous as being trapped because I'm fighting the same way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What if you
it's
are
counterintuitive?
What if you are trapped, like in an elevator?
You're not trapped. You're just in an elevator, right? Trapped is if you are locked up in a room and you absolutely cannot get out. You just are in an elevator for a few minutes. And again, like control vulnerability. Yeah, you're right. I can't get out right now. I don't have to. Alarm. Why do I have to get out right now? You see, like, it's even just that subtle change. I'm not trapped. I'm just in an elevator. Like, and we come up with all those examples of how it feel like, well, I can't leave right now. Oh, and immediately we jump like 10 steps down the line to, oh, I'm stuck. Just like I'm stuck in like the hair salon. Oh, once they put that stuff on my hair, I'm trapped. You know, like, and it comes up in all different ways. Like, I'm in the meeting, the door's closed. Oh, I'm trapped at church. I can't just get up. I'm on the bus, and I can't just get off. Right? I can't just get off. You know, say, well, should there be an emergency in this elevator? Well, hit the emergency button. This elevator is not on fire right now. Nothing's happening right now. Right now, we're just in this thing until the door opens. You see the difference? It doesn't change the actual situation, but it changes how you're perceiving it as one of, like, being dangerous. That if somebody's trapped, I would think you would need to escape, right? When you use
Can
that
I
word,
ask a question?
Like, yeah?
Have you any tips for, essentially, if you speak to, I think a lot of people on the phone now, if we spoke to, sorry, it's really annoying. I can hear my own self speak. A lot of people listening to the phone call right now, would probably agree and say if they spoke to themselves, like, it would feel like a lie. Like they're lying to themselves and they're lying themselves to the anxiety.
John, I'm losing you. Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
You're really clicking in and out. I'm hearing you less than I am. It's gotten a little bit worse.
Can you hear me now?
I think so. Most of it.
Okay.
Something about everybody here on the call, and then it got very choppy.
Okay. So all I'm saying, suggesting, is that a lot of people on this call might agree with me in the sense that how do we speak to ourselves and actually believe it? Or how do we speak to the anxiety and believe it? Because if I was to switch it around and say, hi, I'm just on a plane, and I'm not trapped, I'm just on a plane, I would go, I wouldn't believe what I was saying.
John?
Yep.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I think we lost, kind of, you keep disappearing, but can you hear me okay? Can you hear me fine?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, I think what you said was like, basically like can say all these things, but you're not believing it. Like I can be on a plane and say, oh, I'm not trapped. I'm just on a plane, but I don't believe it. Is that right? Is that what you're saying? And how do you speak to yourself in a way that you believe it?
Correct.
That's correct? Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Silence says a yes. Okay, good. So remember, it's your alarm and you. Your alarm is saying, oh, John, what? You're trapped on the plane. What if you're trapped on the plane? Got to give it like a funny voice so you know the difference. Like, is it real or is it not real? Like, you're not in danger right now on the plane. The plane is not crashing right now. You're just on a plane. You don't, like, believing that or not, that's your alarm just ringing of what if there is danger? But it feels like I'm trapped. So you get to always choose your response, right? So your alarm could ring one way, and then you respond to it in a different way. You don't have to, believing it doesn't mean I feel fine and all the alarms wind down. You don't have to believe anything. Is the plane on fire? Is it on fire? No. Are there bees? Are there snakes on a plane? Remember that awful movie? Like, is there something actually happening right now? No. Oh, wow, but it really feels like there is. Okay, well, then that's my alarm. That's when I practice. That's when to dare, to practice. To practice diffusing, allowing, run towards, and engage. You don't have to like how you feel, and you can't turn off that fear. But that's where the practice, where your confidence starts to grow. Wow, okay, so right now, It's kind of like being in a virtual reality game where, like, you know, it seems like things are flying at you, but you know there's not, right? Like a 3D movie. Logically, you know there's not an asteroid shooting at the screen at your face, but you instinctually still duck, right? You still duck. That's just how our bodies work. That's the point of those movies. It makes people laugh. It's like, oh, it felt like something was coming right at me. Yeah, exactly. But there's nothing coming right at you. But it felt like there was. It looked like there was. Yeah, that was the point of the movie. Right? That's kind of like the same sort of thing. Like roller coasters. Oh, my gosh. I felt like I was going to, like, fall from it to my death. Yeah, felt like it. But you weren't. You were actually safe. But it felt like you weren't. And when you get that, like, kind of discongruency sort of, I don't even know if that's the real word, like, people do that on purpose, and they find it funny. Like, they find it enjoyable. They like that stuff. We don't. Because we're fighting that feeling of falling as if we are falling. We're fighting that feeling of the asteroid coming to us as if there is an asteroid coming to us. So that and all of it is how we react to it. So when you go on that plane and you feel like you're stuck, you can't turn off your feeling, you can't turn off your alarm, but you can choose what you're doing in response to it. And that's when you sit and you just go spaghetti. Say, you know what? If I'm trapped or not, I'm still on a plane. Still not going to jump out of here. So however it is I feel is how I feel. I cannot turn off the feeling, but I'm going to sit here and show my alarm that I don't have to fight how I feel, even though it's so ingrained in me that I really don't like this. It's such a natural reaction to try and get rid of it. That's why there's these programs, because it takes practice. It's counterintuitive, right? Like stop, drop, and roll. You know, you learn that that's drilled into your head when you're a kid. Stop, drop, and roll if you catch fire. Stop, drop, and roll. Why? Because if for some reason it's not in our natural makeup, we catch, if our, my arm, my clothes catch fire, to stop, drop to the floor, and roll around in a circle. Who does that naturally? Nobody does that. What do? We run, right? We flare our arms around. We try and get away from the danger, but it doesn't work because we're just, you know, we're creating more oxygen and we're fanning the flames and the fire gets worse. That's why we have to kind of teach kids that when they're little. Stop, drop, and roll. Stop, drop, and roll. Because as soon as you catch fire, there's a good chance you're going to run the hell away. And we have to kind of teach ourselves, no, 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 don't run. Stop, drop, and roll. There's like funny little counterintuitive approaches like that in life. And it's just keeping that in mind, like, oh, it's just every bone in my body is screaming, like, I need to do something. But I actually don't. I can look around and choose. I'm looking around. There's no actual danger. But it feels like I need to do something. I feel like I really need to do something. Okay, well, that's how you feel. I don't have to do something. There's no actual situation happening. So right now, I can just feel whatever it is I feel. And I'm not saying that it's easy. I know I kind of talk like, yeah, I'll just go do this, and it's not a big deal. But, like, I'm just saying it in this way to keep it simple, not because it's easy, so that you can try and speak to yourself in a more simple way, and it might help as you go out and practice. My long-winded answer. Does that help at all, John? Can you still hear me?
Yep, that's great. Thanks.
Okay, well, guys, keep moving forward. I think this goes through the weekend, but there aren't any more phone calls with me. But if anything pops up, please post away. I think I said on the first call, get your money's worth. You pay for this program. Post away in what you are doing in response to discomfort, right? Change how you talk to yourself. Be nice. Be nice to yourself. Speak, and sometimes we have to pretend. We have to almost speak to ourselves as if we're talking to somebody else, because we can kind of be real assholes to ourselves. And, like, we would, for the most part, never talk to other people the way we talk to ourselves. Like Marcia, could you even imagine, I don't know if you're still on the call, but could you imagine coming on the call and you telling somebody else on the call, oh, wow, I see, like, you were thinking of doing this challenge, but boy, did you fail miserably. Wow, you are such a failure. Could you even imagine those words coming out of your mouth to somebody else on these calls, even though you've never even met them?
No, I'm still on the call, and I just wanted to make a comment. What you're telling us to take, like, minutes out or seconds out and just be with the feelings, isn't that mindfulness?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, without the fight. How you are feeling is how you're feeling. And the more you kind of practice that, the more you truly just sit with how you feel. That's the essence of mindfulness. That's the point of meditation. That's kind of like all of this. Being able to just sit and take a look at what you're feeling is truly, you know, that's right. That's what I'm feeling. Yep, that's right. That's what I'm thinking. Yep, that's right. That's what I'm experiencing right now in this moment. But we tend to kind of hang on through all day long. But when we start letting go bits at a time, it's without the fight and without the expectation of feeling better or having discomfort ever come back. It's truly just practicing just not controlling everything. Like, we don't always have to like how we feel, but there's nothing else to do about it, right? Like the dust from your rug. All right, well, for whatever reason, your rug got shaken out again. Oh, well. I'm sorry, and I know that we don't like the dusty rooms, but it's still the same response. The more you move your arms around, the more you kind of blow around the dust, right? But you don't allow the dust to settle. We have to just let, when we stop fighting and we just acknowledge the shit we don't like as just being shit we don't like, our alarm will slowly start to wind down. Like, oh, well, hello, we're ringing full alert. We're showing you this thing that you fight so much. Oh, I don't know. She's not fighting it anymore. All right, I guess we won't be notifying her of this stuff as much. We might every once in a while. But that's where you're empowered because you don't have to fight your alarm either. You know, we fight to stay alive. We don't have to fight to get comfortable. Like, we're fighting so hard to feel relaxed. It just keeps us in a fight state. Let go. Let go. You may or may not feel comfortable or uncomfortable, but fighting isn't gonna fast forward the process at all. All right, everybody. Well, keep posting away on the Facebook pages. Keep pushing yourself to do nothing. You know, it's a lot of work to do nothing. Teaching yourself how to do nothing little bits of time throughout the day. Go run towards something you don't like just for the sake of doing nothing about it. And when the program ends, I look forward to hopefully seeing some of you over in Dare Advance. And, you know, we can keep moving forward with it all. All right. And if anybody forgot to ask a question, post it in Facebook, and we'll try to address it there before that page closes down. And then Beth can come over to the other site. All right. Thanks.
Great call.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining in. I'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much.
The moderator has left the conference. Thank you.